Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. We've been out on the farm this harvest season doing a series about the people who bring in the Hoosier harvest. This is what Indiana Weekend has always been about, you know. Elsewhere in the news world, you're used to hearing from the officials, the authorities, the spokespeople. In this show, we try to spend more time with the regular folks. And Mary Howell fits that definition. In 1972, she and her husband David started what has become Howell Farms. Today, we talk about farming and families. The Howells, their two daughters, and their sons, Adam and Aaron. It's a good-sized business, and it's run like one. Besides corn and soybeans, they bring in a lot of pumpkins and tomatoes this time of year.
We have always been growers for red gold. We've been growing tomatoes for about 20 years. It's a good crop for us because when the boys came back after college, then we had more families to feed and they weren't married at the time, but the land base here is limited, and so it wasn't like we can't expand to 20,000. It would be so easy to grow 20,000 acres of corn and soybeans, but that isn't an option yet for us here. So the higher value crops, the tomatoes and the pumpkins that we grow, work well. There's a lot more risk involved with them, but there's also a lot more potential, and so we are able to maximize the value that comes from each acre that we farm, and then those crops are grown on a rotation with the corn and soybeans then. So that's another very critical aspect of those crops, is that we get them in the right places the right years. And that takes a lot of finesse and logistical things to work out right.
Did you go to school for all of this? Were you at ag major?
No. Or? I'm a Ball State graduate, and my degree is in nursing. So I worked at the hospital in Muncie for 2 years, right out of school, in the labor and delivery, we used to call it. Now they call it something else, the birthing center, I think. But that was my education. And I did take my last year in college, I took an accounting class, pass-fail. They used to have pass-fail classes. I don't know if they still do or not, but accounting class, because my husband thought that would be a good idea for me to learn a little bit of the basics. And so I almost failed it, but I didn't. I passed it, and the last 40 years have been spent doing a lot of those types of things that I learned in that accounting class. Been a lot more of that side of our family business.
Farming is a business today.
It is. Mm-hmm. Family farms are rapidly consolidating, have been for a long while, but I think the pace has quickened in the last 20 years. For sure. And the number of farms in the last census, I think the total number had increased slightly, but they were all on the very small side. And the number of larger farms has also increased slightly, with those in the middle decreasing, because you either have to become very large and efficient to survive, or you have a job someplace else and you earn your income in town at a different job, and then you farm a little on the side, sort of a hobby or something that you were left with by a parent and you didn't want to completely leave. And so then the middle is just kind of not there anymore.
For operations like yours, it's about economies of scale.
It is. Mm-hmm. My husband and my two sons all have degrees in economics, and so I've learned from them a lot about economics that never entered my mind before when I was trying to learn how to become a nurse. But it plays a role. We have to be able to survive. We have to produce efficiently. There's so much competition locally, but globally. And so American farmers have to be as efficient as possible. We don't stay in business if we're not, and we don't have a product that is desirable for the rest of the world, for our customers.
And I'm guessing you hedge your risk a little bit by diversifying the kinds of crops that you look at.
Exactly. Besides being able to have higher value in some of the specialty crops, it also gives us that diversity that we want and need for variations in the weather. Tomatoes like dry weather. They don't like wet weather. And typically when we have a poorer crop of one crop, then we'll have better crops of another. And so it helps to just spread the risk a little bit.
So you're ready if you have a real wet spring and summer, or if you have a real
I'm not ready. But we do have some irrigation that we can use for dry weather. For years like this, this was one of the toughest. The weather in the spring was very, very difficult. And so we've been farming now for 43 years, and this was one of the most challenging that we faced because of the timing of the excessive rains that we had. And we have never not gotten everything planted until 2015. And there were a few fields that we didn't get planted this year. And it just, after a certain time, it doesn't make any sense to plant, even when it dried out in late June, early July, because it was too late then to have a good crop.
So for us, all the rain in the spring might be an annoyance.
Yeah.
For you, it's you're watching the forecast every day, and you're balancing.
We certainly are. It's our life. It makes a difference in our yield, and so our yield makes a difference in our income, our revenues. The excessive rainfall, there's no remedy for that. We can't shut it off, and we can't dry it out. And so we just have to wait and be ready and to do everything as fast as we can, as well as we can when it does dry out.
Sounds like there's a lot of data involved. You're not looking at woolly worm caterpillars, your satellite information. And
yes, big data is a term that we hear thrown around a lot. And so we seek to use that and manage that to help us be more productive, yes. We're considered a very large farm, a commercial farm. And in some circles, those two words are not necessarily positive. But we also a family farm. It's a family business. And so it's farms like ours that create the abundance that allows us to have the billions of dollars in export that we have around the globe. And so it's a necessity that we do this. And so you've heard the statistics about the burgeoning global population that needs going to be fed. And that's only going to be successfully managed with farms like ours that are producing efficiently.
Mary Howell, the patient narrator of the family story behind Howell Farms in Middletown. It's a story about a family staying in the big business of farming, how some families are getting out, and why this one is staying in.
I worked in your orchards of peaches and prunes, slept on the ground in the light of your moon. On the edge of your
Indiana Weekend, Real Radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com.
So you're at one time a family business, but a large farm. Are those becoming more rare because of, you know, the next generation maybe doesn't want to do it, and so the larger commercial operations grow larger and larger from family farms?
Of course. Adam and Aaron are very rare in that they have production background. They grew up on a farm. And when they were growing up, our farm wasn't as large as it is now. We were hit very hard in the 80s because we started on our own. We were first generation farmers there. And so it was really, we concentrated on survival. And through God's grace, we were able to do that and survive. And so now that they're here, they have that wonderful background that you don't get anywhere else besides actually growing up, living on a farm and working hard and doing it. They know how to do it. They know how to fix machinery. They know how to do manual labor. They know how to manage people who help us and who work with us here on the farm. And so they learned that the hard way and growing up. So they have that, and then they both have they're intelligent. They have very good education in economics. Like I said, it's not agronomic. It's economics, because agronomics are something that they also have to master. So they're young. They have the production experience, and they have good education, and they've honed their business skills through their education, and they're working with a variety of people that they have come in contact with through the years. So they're a rare commodity. And so that allows our farm then to be able to do the things that we do. So many people our age, my age, their children opted for other occupations. Understandably, there's probably less risk and there's probably a lot less work involved in it. And so those people then our age, our generation, they need to, if they own farmland still, farm owners, they would have to rent that to someone like Adam and Aaron, and if they're fortunate enough to come in contact with them. So I consider David and I really, really blessed and fortunate because somehow, miraculously, through their growing up years, they decided that they wanted to come back and do this. And so if they hadn't, then we would be looking for ways to close down and shut down what we started and what we did. Instead, we get to be here and work every day, but we don't have to make the decisions anymore. We get to be a little bit more free with our time. But the best part is that we get to watch what has happened with what we started and what Adam and Aaron then were able to take and just run with. And how much better does it get than that? So.
Did you see a point where, you know, some of your friends' kids were kind of going one way and your boys?
They used to, and the girls too. I mean, the girls worked right along with them too. I don't mean to be leaving them out. They know what that's like too. And one of our daughters still has a family, but she helps us here, helps me in the office part-time. And our other daughter lives across the road. She's a school teacher, and she's always around and knows what's going on here. But with the boys, when they were growing up in high school, they would go, they all were in sports, and they would, they had 2-day practices for football. So they would get up in the morning, go to early practice, come home, change their clothes, go out and work. Whatever we had to have done that day. Then they would have some lunch, they would put their football clothes back on and go back to practice in the afternoon, where most of their friends, not that they were lazy or anything, it was just a different life, a different world for them. Most of their friends had gone home, rested for that period of time. And that's an example of the things that they did. And they worked all weekend. I mean, they just learned what that was like. And so by rights, that should have driven them away, and they should have gone, you know, sought other things. And we encourage them to look at all the educational opportunities that were available to them and not to be quite so narrow-minded. David went to Purdue and I went to Ball State, and for our parents, those were really good things for us to do. But for our children, our own children, we didn't find fault with state schools here in Indiana, nothing wrong with them. We just encouraged them to also look elsewhere just in case there was something that they liked better. And we visited a lot of schools. And when they were in high school, a lot of colleges we visited, and so to see if there was a good fit. And so by encouraging that, we knew that there was a risk that they might not come back, because not only, you know, was there a lot of hard work here at home, but there was a bigger world out there than Middletown, Indiana. They all saw that, they took advantage of that opportunity, they went far away from home, and then during that time, they were strengthened in their character, their faith, and their commitment to come back and do this. So how do I explain? I can't explain that. I am grateful for it, and I know that there's a lot of our faith in put to work there, but I don't have any other explanation for it. So by rights, they should be doing something else. They could have been, but instead they're here making this better, raising their children and making that life for them.
That has to make you feel good.
It does. It makes me feel great. I thank God for that every day. You know, that my prayers usually start out, thank you for the work that we have to do today here together. I mean, I'm very grateful. Well, our farm's motto is growing with gratitude. And so we started that one back in the hard days when we weren't sure if we were going to be here from one year to the next. But it was sort of a, you know, it's got a double meaning. We grow things for a living. We are growing, our business is growing, and we are extremely grateful for both of those things.
Mary Howell of Howell Farms in Middletown, talking about her sons Adam and Aaron and their daughters carrying on the operation started by Mary and her husband David more than 40 years ago.
Now the sound of the wheat
and you're feeling her out on a Sunday.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
Today, the story of the shrinking number of family farmers and the story of one family's next generation staying with the land.
We both grew up on farms, but went away to college and weren't sure what we were going to do. I was going to be a nurse. I was going to be a missionary nurse. And David was not sure what he wanted to do, and he went to grad school because he wasn't sure what he wanted to do. And so one fall, I was home. It was quarter break at the time. I was helping my brother with that farming at that time. I was hauling a load of corn to the elevator in the old grain truck. And so I was there in line at the farmer's elevator in Oakville, Indiana. And so David was home he was working on his master's, and he was home that weekend for something. He was there at the elevator grinding feed for their livestock. So then that was when he called.
Did you two know each other then?
No, not really. We went to the same high school, but he was out before I got in high school. He's a little older. And so
So on this day, you meet up and...
Mm-hmm, yeah. And then
what
he
was
called
that conversation
me shortly
like?
After. We didn't talk. We just, waved. So that was it. So then not too long after, I got a phone call. And so that's kind of how it started.
You, too, weren't getting land from your parents, right?
No.
You had to start right from the scratch.
We did. And at first, we did rent my mother's land after a few years. But she was not actively farming it anymore. My brothers were not. And David's father was still actively farming. But we did not go into business with them. We went our own way and did our own thing. And so it was, there were some times there in the 80s when it was really tough, when maybe we wished that we hadn't made that decision, but it was right for us. And so it was a good thing, and it's a good feeling.
Did you start with some small number?
We had 300 rented acres to start with, and then we owned nothing. We had a pickup truck and a car. And so then we rented 300 acres from neighbors, and David borrowed money from his grandparents to put a down payment on the first tractor. So that's how I started. We had some good years in the 70s, and then everything went south in the 80s, and we managed to hang on, like I said, by the grace of God.
The 1980s was the time of farm aid and people losing their farms,
mm-hmm.
and for people,
mm-hmm.
that was a while ago, beyond the memory of some folks. What was going on back then for people who weren't around?
Yeah, it was really tough. It was especially hard for us because we had no foundation here. We were out there on our own. And so everything that we had earned, we had plowed back into the farm. And we used debt financing. And so it was really hard for us to hold on. But we had, by this time, started into a small kind of a horticultural enterprise, and we had a small on-site farm market. And so we let that grow during the 80s, or we worked hard to let that grow during the 80s, because that was our grocery money. That was what we lived on, and it kept us going while we were trying to work through all the rest of it. We worked hard, and we were blessed. We were very fortunate in that way, and were able to hold on and keep going. And so, but it was during that time that they were doing all the retail farm market and growing all the vegetables. We had an apple orchard, and that worked for us in that time period. And then as the boys started to come back, and it was clear that they were going to come back, then they needed to start making some changes. And that's when that horticulture enterprise then just kind of, through the process of evolution, became larger. And so instead of sending out tomatoes in bushel baskets like they had when they were children, like we did, now they send them out in semi-load quantities, and that's the right thing for us now and the best thing for us now.
Describe your operation now in terms of size. And
we have several thousand acres, but we don't own that much. We rent that many, and we grow, of those, about 1,000 acres are dedicated to the vegetables. And so those are very management intensive, and I would say the investment in dollars and equipment and manpower inputs and all to those 1,000 acres is equivalent to 10 times that in regular corn and soybeans. So we love the growing the corn and soybeans because it's easy and or easier. There's risk involved with that too, of course. But so once we finish the in the fall, when we finish the tomato and the pumpkin harvest, and we just have corn and soybeans to harvest, we feel like we're on vacation because that is just enjoyable. It's everyone loves to that time of year when we're down to just combining corn and soybeans, and we're almost there. So
imagine it's December. Sounds like a lot of planning for next spring, and maybe all that's done already.
Around here in December, we are working hard in the office to analyze what happened through that growing season, looking at the plans that we had made, how they were fulfilled, what wasn't fulfilled, what worked, what didn't, analyzing all of that to see what we need to learn to do it better the next time. So there's a lot of work that goes on in the office. We're also heavy into the planning process for 2016, for the next year, and that involves crop choices, what crop goes in what field, what is the type of seed will be used for each crop, what quantities and type of fertilizer will be used, and trying to do the purchasing of all of those inputs too. And then outside, there is also going on at the same time, we're hauling grain that we have stored in the bins. We are repairing machinery, just any number of things that we work on outside during the winters.
And take me back to the hills of Indiana. And take me back to when I was a kid. And let me see the cornfields by the river. Cause in my mind, it's country life for me.
We found this a fascinating chat, a person willing to open up and talk about their family's life, and through that, to help us understand so many other Indiana families, about a way of life in retreat, in one sense, but still very much an important part of the Indiana story. Glad we met the Howells of Middletown, and hope you enjoyed hearing their family story. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from IPR's listeners. We hope you'll join your friends who are IPR members. You can go to indianapublicradio.org or give us a call at 1-800-646-1812. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.